This month has been extremely busy for me with celebrating Pride with the parish at the Red Wings game and at the Pride Parade, while also being a graduate student at Boston College's School of Ministry and Theology, all while running Noir Collective, plus 5 o'clock service last night, 7:30 this morning, and now 9:30. Y'all, I'm exhausted. But I am so grateful for each of you who showed up for Pride this year. And as Lauren said on Thursday, the impact of Spiritus being visible in our city's Pride festivities is truly in alignment with our commitment to be an inclusive community for all. And it's another reminder that we are not new to this, but we are true to this, and that's a beautiful thing. I just finished this class entitled Eco-Womanist Ethics, taught by Dr. Melanie Harris. And in short, eco-womanism is an interdisciplinary way to approach environmental justice work and climate change. It is theorized and constructed and practiced by women of African descent. Eco-womanism beautifully articulates the connection between environmental justice, social justice, and represents an interconnected relationship of spirit, nature, and humanity, where earth justice is a primary goal. I am deeply committed to ministry that is inclusive and earth-honoring because my spiritual and earthly lineage are all connected to this land. One of my favorite parts of this class were reading texts like Blood in the Soil by Chris Carter and Touching the Earth by Bell Hooks, as these texts explain and define the problems of a contemporary ecological movement from a historical and non-dominant purview. It illuminates oppressive systems at work while presenting a counter-narrative to the white racial frame, which Carter defines as a worldview that interprets everything through the lens of the white experience. It is vital to disrupt and dismantle this monolithic trope for the cause of environmental justice and for the work of liberation for human and non-human life alike. And it points us to remember, and that is to rejoin ourselves to the harmony of nature in all its interconnected forms. Our verses today present an opportunity to examine the parable of the rich farmer through an eco-womanist lens, which will bring us closer to God's dream for the world and to each other. While studying these verses, most theologians overlook the land as a main study point in this parable. They pointed mainly to overall greed as the takeaway and moral of this story. And to their point, Jesus flat out told us to be aware of greed in verse 15. There is so much more to uncover in these verses, so let's lean in to some of the lessons from the land. Our first lesson is that it is not ours anyways. It is a native belief that we cannot own the land, but rather we are stewards and cohabitants with non-human nature and grateful recipients of the bounty the land provides. David the psalmist said, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and the people." So it's important that we pause here and give the earth the reverence and honor that it is due. We creation don't understand the complexity of the Creator and how this planet is so perfect for sustaining life and providing the abundance mentioned. The land is truly a gift from God that is always part of the conversation. And this farmer didn't acknowledge that gift at all. The gifts of the sun, of the wind, of the dirt, of the water, and most importantly, of spirit, are all necessary ingredients for a bountiful harvest. And even in all our human brilliance, we cannot comprehend all of God's handiwork on this planet. This thwarts the capitalist belief of, quote unquote, owning the means of production as a way to justify mass wealth accumulation as a result of exploitation of the land and of the workers. We don't know if the farmer had an equitably paid, unionized staff, or if he committed wage theft, or if he used slave labor. But we are given the invitation to imagine how one person could glean abundant harvest. Is it possible to do alone, without the labor of others, without the land? In acknowledging that it isn't ours, because God gives the increase, and that we are interdependent on each other and the land, we can divest from exploitation and delve into equitable and earth-honoring practices that show care for the earth and of our neighbors. Our second lesson from the land is to recognize and appreciate diversity. In reading this parable, I imagine that this farm practiced permaculture, which is a process inspired by natural relationships. It's a whole systems model that is in harmony to produce rich soil and yield diverse crops. If you walk in any grocery store, you will find red, round tomatoes, a basic, tasteless mutation that produces, quote unquote, consistent size and color for the consumer. This reduces the tomato because did you know that there are over 10,000 varieties of tomato and they range in color from pink and yellow to deep purple? There are also heirloom varieties of tomato that have been lost due to the lack of appreciation for diversity coupled with a strong desire for conformity, which is not our earth-honoring practice, given the evidence that monoculture, or planting one type of crop, leads to depleted soil. So diversity is beneficial for the land and further strengthens the whole system. I invite you to imagine what our land experience would be like with just one type of tomato, or one type of tree, or even one type of person. The experience would not be as robust and abundant due to the exclusion and erasure that must be at work so that a single story, so a single narrative can thrive. This includes the erasure of the experience of trans folks, gay and lesbian folks, Black folks, women, non-binary identities, the deaf community, disabled communities, and other communities that have been barred from full inclusion in our society and our communities of faith. The communities of faith have allowed terrible harm to happen to folks in the name of respectability and quote-unquote religious soundness. It requires repair immediately. It's in that recognition and appreciation for diversity on the human and non-human level that we are celebrating LGBTQ plus communities today. As we celebrate the variety of crops or flowers that naturally occur on Earth, the land reminds us to appreciate our uniqueness because we are fearfully and wonderfully made in the divine image of God. And it takes an active commitment to intentionally recognize and appreciate the diversity all around us due to this disconnection of the lessons from the land. Our third and final lesson from this land parable is to tear down old barns. We have to tear down the barns of oppression in all its forms. We must tear down the barns of racism, of sexism, of classism. We must tear down the barns of transphobia, homophobia, and the like. We have to tear down the barn of capitalism, greed, and exploitation. We must tear down the barns of selfishness and scarcity. And these barns must come down because they cannot hold the fullness of our abundance and our land experience. And everyone needs a barn or safe and healthy, affordable housing options. We can build a community barn for the redistribution of wealth or surplus resources that are available. We can build a barn of radical equity where reparations are freely given to repair the harm of those old barns. We can build barns of acceptance and inclusion where all can be free. We can build barns of affirming and safe medical care. We can build barns of faith communities that embrace more than one type of tomato. And Spiritus is a new barn with an abundance mindset that embraces whatever type of tomato you are or are not. And regular people came together to create this gathering where we can all participate. It's literally for all people. This is how I know we can build new barns and lean on one another and on the earth for all to thrive. Thank you so much. Happy Pride, Spiritus.